Jacksonville sheriff says he's considering changes in the wake of last Friday's Hemming Park violence. HUD Secretary Ben Carson visits town, and it's the first town hall meeting for North Florida Congressman Al Lawson. Some of the stories making headlines this week. Good Friday morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross, and we are always live on the radio at 9. Also, never miss a show. Download the WJCT app and get our podcast anytime. You can also stream this show live right now on our Facebook page. Just ahead, we'll take your calls on the week's top stories. Get on the line right now at 549-2937. Then later, National Network anchor Soledad O'Brien speaks with us about her upcoming conference to empower young women, happening right here at WJCT this weekend. Plus, don't miss the live in-studio performance by singer-songwriter Morley. All of that and more ahead this hour. But first, it's Friday, time for our weekly roundtable as we welcome blogger Fred Matthews to Studio 5. Good to see you, Fred.
Good morning, Melissa. Good to be here.
Good to see you. Tim Gibbons, who edits the Jacksonville Business Journal.
Good morning.
WJCT reporter Lindsay Kilbride.
Good morning.
And our own business analyst, John Burr.
Hey, good morning.
So good to have you all here and lots to discuss this Friday. Everything from HUD Secretary Ben Carson's visit to the Eureka Garden Complex to a major settlement announced this week involving a local police shooting. But our top story this Friday, the Jacksonville Sheriff's Office says it's reviewing its procedures after a controversial series of events last week that were kicked off after an anti-war protest in Hemming Park. Now, Sheriff Mike Williams says it's apparent some review is needed after chaos broke out in the park between protesters speaking out against airstrikes in Syria. Five protesters were arrested on felony charges, and a couple suffered injuries at the hands of police. Meanwhile, there was some discussion and on the parts of some outrage about counter-protester Gary Snow. He appeared on this program Monday and denied that he instigated any of the violence in the park. Snow was not arrested. Meanwhile, the Jacksonville Progressive Coalition says it's planning to file a lawsuit against the city and the JSO over the whole thing. We want to know what you think about all this. Do you think the JSO is making the right call to review its police procedures as they try to keep public safety top of mind during public protests? Give us a call. 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online, send your emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. Weigh in on Facebook. Fred Matthews, let's begin with you. What do you think about the Progressive Coalition saying they're going to file a lawsuit over this whole mess?
Well, I mean, it's an interesting thing to do. I mean, we all know that it'll be a year, 2 years, if anything ever comes out of any such lawsuit, because they've got to do the same thing everybody else has got to do, the same thing sheriff's got to do. They got to get the video and review it, and they've got to go through the hearsay, and whatever attorney they get has got to do the same thing. I mean, it's an interesting thing to do, but the major focus will be in the sheriff's review of what his officers, how his officers handle this event, especially since they did have some experience with this in the protest that came up right after the election last year and during the visit. So it's not as if they didn't know what to do, but they didn't seem to know what to do. They got themselves, the little video we can see is that the officers got themselves in the middle of a brawl and got bumped into somebody else, which automatically gets you a charge of, what, assaulting a police officer. I mean, just bumping into one, and now you've assaulted him, or you're resisting arrest. So you get into all of that.
It's a POP charge.
Yeah.
Right. Now, Gary Snow, who also goes by another name, has appeared at a lot of these protests in recent months around town, and he is a figure of some controversy, given some of his social media postings. As we were discussing this on Monday, Snow called into the program to give his side of things. Here's what he had to say.
I actually stand up to racism. Racism comes in any form and any color. We have a new movement in America called Black Supremacy and Black Nationalists.
Okay. At that point, we ended the conversation. Lindsay Kilbride,
Yeah, I mean, there's been a lot of allegations about him and his background, and a lot of people are looking into it now and his history. And, you know, he does have a photo or a video of him shooting a Pan-African flag, which I guess I think he told Action News he regrets now. I don't know. But I think the main criticism I've been hearing about the whole thing is just, why were the counter-protesters and protesters not separated? I asked GSO about it. The sheriff gave a statement basically saying they don't tell people where to stand. However, I've been to protests where they were separated, and I don't know if that was just on their own or what. I don't know if JSO intervened and separated them, but I've been to protests where they were standing on opposite sides of the sidewalk, and that seemed to work out better. People, they were still saying whatever they had to say, and they were both able to do what they set out to do while they were there.
I think Tim Gibbons and John Burke.
I think that's part of the irritation here, is almost this idea that obviously you have people protesting, emotions are running high. This is a confusing kind of, it's a weird protest to be the one everybody's focused on. It's not like it was an anti-Trump protest exactly. It was a anti-Syria bombing.
In a way
bombing.
It was, though.
It was kind of, but, you know, Trump was anti-Syria bombing a couple weeks ago.
I know, but anything this president does, people that don't like the Trump administration are going to turn out to protest.
So it becomes a thing.
And it became very politicized very quickly.
And the question is, so what is the role of police officers in that case? And the general thing has been to keep the peace, which includes basically separating people, not simply to wait for a fight to break out and arrest people.
Jacksonville's not a big protest town.
Right. Well, that may be changing.
That may be changing, and that's why the police really need to come up on speed how to deal with these types of situations. I think, you know, the separating the two sides is kind of basic for police forces that actually deal with this stuff a lot.
You could also argue that some of the protesters should also up their game when it comes to dealing with provocation. There is a certain amount of, you look at cities that have more of a protest culture, they have ways of dealing with it themselves.
Yeah, and you know, the Progressive Coalition said on this program Monday that they do train their activists to not engage in an angry way with people who have another point of view. For a number of reasons, that whole process seemed to break down in the park on Friday, last Friday. And Fred, as you said, when you review the video, there's lots of video people took of these incidents. From different angles, you do see different things. And we'll have to see how JSO reacts to the video as they go forward. But in the meantime, the five people arrested have all lawyered up, and they will be pursuing their own cases.
Well, I mean, that's to be expected. But what we look for from our sheriff's office, and again, this is not new business. Now, they can review it, but first of all, they had to apply for a permit to be there. Okay, that's the first one. When they did that, that automatically triggers several things, among them being the sheriff's office gets notified, especially if it's downtown as it was. Mm-hmm. So we've had this separation of powers before. During the Marissa trial at the courthouse, you had folks down
Marissa
there protesting.
Marissa Alexander.
Yeah, down there protesting that for days. Following the shooting in Central Florida, we've had protests for days. So it's not as if we didn't know what to do, but for some reason, whoever was in command and control here for the police did not take that into account here, to have these folks separated, especially when you have such vocal activity from that stage as was taking place there.
Lindsay.
I think what you're saying about a lot of these people who are arrested challenging it, I think a few of them have a pretty good case, which is, you know, the people who are arrested purely for inciting a riot, for them to be arrested for that. And I think one of them, if I'm correct, which I've watched a lot of the videos, Dave, the guy who kind of set it up, you know, I think according to like the police account too, he was basically just arrested for setting up the protest and then also charged with inciting a riot. So for him to get that and then the counter protester to not be charged at all, I think those sort of things are what people are looking at.
And also they're tracking a lot of other incidents where this guy showed up and sort of engaged with anti-war or anti-Trump protesters, and he's just been a presence around town.
The inciting charges are always interesting because it's, you know, I had an older brother who started the fight, the one who just, you know, kept on saying something, the one who threw the first punch, or maybe both. When you look at someone who has a history of going to protest and, you know, trying to elevate the situation, escalate the situation, it is interesting to see him not arrested and somebody responding who was.
And let's go to your calls. What do you think about this? It's 549-2937. Susan is in Mandarin right now. Hey, Susan, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. Y'all are asking all the same questions that I have, and I did email the sheriff's office asking specifically if they were going to ask Gary Snow to not disrupt the rally this coming Saturday, and they did not respond to me, and I was wondering if y'all were, I mean, by now they should have a plan, right, how they're going to separate the antagonistic agitator, which I guess we're all calling Gary Snow now, from other people so that when we go to a rally, we can hear the speakers. I mean, this guy has been doing it for months, and finally it's come to the head. One person was finally, I mean, the ACLU, I went to an ACLU meeting, and they said, oh, well, just be quiet and ignore him. And so people have been ignoring him, and he just escalated. I saw the video of him on stage interrupting the speakers, and the police do nothing at all. And I think by now, Sheriff Williams should have had a statement exactly what he's going to do in separating the agitator. And I was wondering if y'all have tried to get a response, a specific response. I tried, and they would not respond to me. Okay.
Thanks, Susan. Yeah, and Sheriff Williams has put out a statement, basically, so far, telling us and everyone else covering this that they're reviewing how they handle these matters, and we'll see how things go Saturday. There's another protest planned for Saturday.
Is it going to be outside?
I believe so.
Well, that's the problem. Because, you know, again, if you hearken back to control of it, one of the reasons why President Trump was able to have certain people escorted out of the Veterans Arena last year because they were perceived to be disruptive to his speech. And there was a group of black folks, I think they were Panther Party members, but they sat quietly up in the arena, didn't say a word. But the closer they got to President Trump's speech, the more nervous they got, and though that group of about 8 or 9 folks were ceremoniously escorted out of the arena.
You mean unceremoniously, right?
Well, it was ceremoniously okay. Because they were quiet, but they were escorted out because they were perceived to be a problem. But that was inside a controlled environment.
If you're out in the park,
Park, what are you going to do? You can't take them out because it's a public conveyance. It's free. And that's the problem that they run into. They can spot him and see him, but you're out open. It's everybody's freedom to be
there. And going against the anti-war protesters, you see Snow really trying to rile things up verbally.
Yeah.
He doesn't put his – does he – now, there's conflicting testimonies to whether he put his hands on someone, whether he physically assaulted someone. And so it really goes right up to the edge of whether or not this man did something that – you know what I'm saying? Like – the police are going to have to look closely at that.
Well, the fact he's on the stage that was set up for a protest that he had nothing to do with, I mean, that's ridiculous to begin with. He shouldn't be anywhere near that stage. The other thing is, you know, if you do look at those videos, these are not definitive high-quality videos, but it does seem like, you know, that Snow really made the first aggressive physical movement in this, and the police.
There's one image I saw where he touched someone, but I can't tell from the image whether or not he's physically hitting or pushing the person.
Well,
and the police arrested the anti-war protester.
Then there's a reaction.
He put
to
his
that.
Hands back on Snow.
Yes, then there's a reaction to what Snow did, and then the police, a particular police officer, by the way, who. Apparently, I doubt we'll see him Saturday at this counter protest. But he really escalated the whole
thing. Okay, let's go to Linda on Bay Meadows. Go ahead, Linda.
Yes. One of the things when I saw the video, and this kind of went around regional because I have three activities, you know, they were talking about, you know, war protesters or different protests, and our menagerie came up. And they always tell me, like, what's going on in Jacksonville? I mean, it's 101. If they need to look at New York, this is...
Okay, we're having trouble hearing you, Linda. Linda, we're having a little trouble hearing you.
The police, places that have a protest, like New York, or LA, You have a
okay, Linda, I'm so sorry to cut you off, but that's just a really bad connection. Try us back. Let's go to Matt in downtown Jacksonville. Go ahead, Matt.
Hey, everyone. Hope you had a great week. Basically, I just wanted to point out that we're not talking about the fact that it could be perceived as self-defense the way, you know, Gary was up on stage screaming in people's faces that can, you know, damage hearing. Even, you know, his sit, you know, being that close to him is you can definitely claim self-defense. And then further, whenever he put his middle finger into Groom's face so quickly, that could be interpreted as a punch in such a hostile environment. But I would have blocked it and, you know, countered and tried to keep him away from me for the defense of myself and the others around me, because this guy constantly shows up at events harassing, you know, not just people in person, but online, photoshopping weird pictures of, you know, people that are just out volunteering, trying to make their, you know, local area a better place.
Thanks, Matt. Thanks for the call. Tim.
It's interesting how in some ways the lens through which you view things, or even just the words you use, can shape the way you look at it. I think one of the earlier callers talked about the activists in the park. We, and as most people have, as they themselves called it, have referred to it as a protest. And there's a certain amount of, you have the protesters and you have the anti-protesters and violence breaks out. Mm-hmm. If you look at it almost more as you have people in a park listening to speeches and a guy jumps up on the stage and starts waving his hand in their face, suddenly it becomes a different sort of thing. I don't know. I wasn't there. I don't know what is the more accurate shade, but the caller's point basically was, yeah, you know, people are afraid of this guy. Is that self-defense? You know?
Lindsay.
Yeah, I mean, I think the caller's pointing out what a lot of people have been commenting on all the stories and everything, which is, you know, when you watch the video, it's clear that the counter-protester is, you know, in everybody's face. He's up on stage. He's not really the victim necessarily. You know, he's egging people on. And so when you're sticking your hand in someone's face, you know, flicking them off, and I don't know if he touched the guy or not, but when you're doing things like that, you know, you are starting something. So you could expect someone to sort of react to that or feel threatened. But yeah, I don't know. I think it's a lot of the videos, you know, they're all kind of from different angles and stuff. So yeah. I think it's a matter of sort of piecing everything together, and that's something that I don't know if anyone's really done yet, which is,
and I'm sure the attorneys for these those arrested will, the police will begin this work. Let's go to Scott at the beaches. Hey, Scott.
Hey, yeah, so I went to one of these progressive coalition meetings or whatever. It was at the Jacksonville Library on near Hodges, and Snow showed up and he was yelling. It was a very similar like type situation. While videotaping. By the way, I think he videotapes everything, so there must be a way to find that as well. But so he was videotaping. I think he has like a YouTube channel where he posts all this stuff. But someone, you know, he started getting in someone's face, and I think the guy like maybe grabbed his phone. He didn't touch him, but he like grabbed his phone as he was videotaping. And then, you know, Snow started like choking the guy out in front of everybody. And they, you know, called the cops. They took him outside. They didn't do anything. And that was it. And, you know, he was basically just waiting outside to intimidate people as they walked out, you know, to leave the meeting. So, I mean, the cops said they know this guy very well. Like, they've dealt with him many, many times before. So, anyway, I just thought I'd, you know, mention that.
Okay. Thanks, Scott. And as we talk about this story, also making headlines this week when it comes to the JSO, the city of Jacksonville reached this week a $1.9 million settlement with the family of an unarmed man killed by police in 2012. This has been a five-year-long saga that was potentially heading to court. Davinian Williams was shot and killed by police, and the fallout was wide-ranging. Everything from the ouster of Jeff Edwards, the white officer who fired the fatal shots and won his job back through arbitration, then resigned a year later, to the family's filing lawsuit. This all ended Thursday with a personal apology, pretty unusual, from Sheriff Williams to the family of Davinian Williams. This was a letter from the sheriff directly, and Fred Matthews, he talked about the reforms the JSO has made in response to this particular shooting and the litigation that followed. Is this enough of a mea culpa from the police to calm a long-running upset, particularly among the city's African Americans, over this issue of police-involved shootings when it comes to altercations with unarmed black men?
Well, I think it's a remarkable piece for the sheriff to have sent that letter of apology out. After all, this did not happen on his watch. But the end of the story here is that the police officer got off with nothing, while the family is without the relative, and he was shot for what would not be a capital crime. And that's the issue that is at hand here, whether it's a police chase. I think in the bottom of the story here, we find that there was some cocaine found in his shoe. Is that a capital crime? Is a police chase can end as a capital crime? Are we still solving justice? The police, the arbiters of judge and jury. That's still the issue at the heart of this particular matter. Mm-hmm. But at least for this family, they can find some solace, because this is far and above what, of course, would normally be paid in any settlement.
It's a major settlement.
Yeah, so it's a big deal there.
Yeah. Okay, and the number to join is 549-2937. By the way, here's an email from Ed about all of this. It's interesting to see the left complaining for others using the same tactics that are used by far more often on the left themselves. At least the right wing hasn't started to block roads or bridges. And he's referring to these protests that are springing up in town. Okay.
I think that is an interesting point. It's why I think that protester, counter-protester narrative is actually a fascinating thing, just even apart from this. But the idea of, I think you have people who are pro-free speech who don't think you should shout somebody down no matter what they're saying, and then you have people who, you know, punch Nazis. And it's it's a question that I think, you know, as a public, we have to answer for ourselves. Where do you draw the line? What's a valid form of protesting, and what isn't?
At what point are you breaking the law?
Right. It's going to be a lot of training this summer for the Sheriff's Department, because, again, Jacksonville is not used to this type of social interaction, not like New York, not like Washington, but it's coming. It's here, and in order to avoid these types of melees that we had in the park, the police are going to have to be better trained.
And you know what was also here this week, speaking of Washington? HUD Secretary Ben Carson, as he came down from the nation's capital to Jacksonville Tuesday for a tour of the troubled Eureka Garden public housing complex. Carson met with residents and local officials and laid out his plans to reform the public housing system in America. He was joined by Senator Marco Rubio and Congressman Al Lawson, more about him in a minute, as they all toured through two Eureka Garden apartments as part of Carson's visit. Here's HUD Secretary Ben Carson in Jacksonville.
When people get together and begin to advocate for themselves, and then they have some local representatives who are willing to stand by their side, it's really quite amazing what can be accomplished.
And Carson said the tenants' organization at Eureka Garden, which has been plagued by problems for years, should be a model for the whole country. Lindsay.
Yeah, I think he said tenants forming these sort of unions, he loves that. I think he was saying, you know, what he wants to do is, you know, establish savings accounts for people so they can make a down payment on a house, and community centers and health centers at these, Section 8 complexes. And he wants vouchers for people versus just the apartment complexes. So I think, all that sounds really great. But the big question is, will you have the funding to do this? And that's the question, is we'll just have to wait and see how the budget turns out, because
President Trump wants to cut the HUD budget. So what's the likelihood of what Carson wants to do coming to pass?
And does he have anybody that can lobby in Congress for this? Certainly Congressman Lawson here is not in a position to do that. Possibly Senator Rubio might be willing to put it somewhere, but he's not into housing like that. He's more into international affairs and armed forces. So who's going to lobby to do this in an administration where these kinds of things are being downplayed?
That's always the challenge of this sort of thing. That it, sure, these are great ideas. It's a wonderful thing that somebody would come and go, Eureka Garden needs help. People have been saying Eureka Garden needs help for a long, long time.
How long now, right?
It's actually getting the funding, getting the personnel, actually putting programs in place, and this does not appear to have that, you know, or that this is going
to
happen.
Yeah, and now Marco Rubio said he plans to keep the spotlight on Eureka Garden. We'll see if he follows through on that. And as you mentioned, Fred, we have a freshman congressman now in town, Al Lawson, brand new on Capitol Hill. He held his first town hall in Jacksonville this week. Lawson, of course, pushed out former Representative Corrine Brown to win the CD5 seat. At the town hall Wednesday, Lawson tried to strike a bipartisan tone on all the big issues ranging from the bombing in Syria to local matters, like whether or not to dredge the St. John's River to accommodate bigger ships. He also told the crowd he'd like to bring Education Secretary Betsy DeVos to town for a visit. All of this as rumors fly that former Jacksonville Mayor Alvin Brown is eyeing Lawson's seat in Congress and may challenge him in the next election.
Well, you know, that seat is a Jacksonville seat traditionally.
Now it's Jacksonville and Tallahassee. Yeah.
And people in Jacksonville don't like sharing that with Tallahassee.
Right.
They want the focus on Jacksonville. And that was Corrine Brown's forte. I mean, Corrine delivers is more than a slogan. Mm-hmm. It was actually she was very effective. So I can see Alvin coming forth and giving Mr. Lawson quite a run. He's got 2 years to show what he can do, which isn't a lot in Congress, especially a minority party. But, you know, yeah, Alvin,
well,
I can see that.
Alvin Brown did not necessarily leave office with the greatest number of people cheering for him, but He was able to become the city's first Democrat mayor, first black mayor since, you know, ever. So
yeah,
he obviously has the political skills there, and it will be interesting to see if he can, you know, kind of build on a mayorship that was not seen necessarily as the greatest in the world, but yeah, gives him a base.
Well, one of the things that strikes me about Congressman Lawson's he hasn't gotten to his 100 days in office yet either, but it just doesn't give the aura of being as competent as you would think he should be.
And
now, granted, there are a lot of issues that he has to learn, but when you visit his Washington, D.C. office, I mean, it's vacant. The room is dark most of the time when you go up there and visit. For the first, and it's not unusual, for the first few days, the local office here in Jacksonville, for the first 60-some days, the local office here in Jacksonville didn't have a phone number. You got Tony Hill running basically as lobbyist down here in Jacksonville for him. That's former state senator Tony Hill.
And how does all this compare to our other congressman, John Rutherford? Yeah. Let's talk about that for a minute, because he has declined to hold any town hall, and he's suffered some health problems.
Yeah.
So we do have two representatives trying to represent us in Washington.
I think it's somewhat of a question how good the congressman's health actually is. It's a hard job to do. He was new to it, and having the health issues affect him right off the bat is, I'm sure, presented a higher level of challenge than perhaps was expected.
And I think Rutherford already has a leg up because he is so beloved by a lot of people in Jacksonville. So,
whereas Lawson's a new face.
Sure.
Yeah.
So he almost has more to prove. I mean, knowing the issues of the city, really being invested in these things. And Rutherford campaigned on Jacksonville issues.
And Lawson doesn't do himself a great deal of good by touting Education Secretary Betty DeVos to his constituency. He has a Democratic left-wing constituency. This Secretary of Education is for charter schools, full score. She's, you know, it's not the kind of thing that you want to hear
time. That liking of charter schools by certain slices of the progressive community, though. So, I mean,
it seems as though Lawson is really trying to walk a middle path, politically speaking.
I'll have to say, though, school board chair Paula Wright, who I believe was at Hillary events and whatnot, she really wants Betsy DeVos to come to Duval County. So she asked for it. She's wanting to have her come here. So I don't know if it's you know, because she's supportive or not. It's, but you know, she is the education secretary. So why would we not want to bring her to Jacksonville to come see our schools and try to educate her about our community and our issues? I mean, that's where she's coming from with wanting to bring Betsy DeVos here.
All right. Well, as always, great insight from this foursome. Finally, it's our look at the strange, bizarre, and just plain ridiculous from around the state. Luckily, there's never a shortage of material. A couple of only in Florida is for you right now. Here it is for you right now. And only in Florida do horses attack alligators and walk away totally unscathed. Mm-hmm. This is on video. You can check it out on Facebook as a horse attacks a gator at Payne's Prairie over near Gainesville. In the video, you see the horse grazing with a few other horses in a field when behind it trots a large alligator. The horse runs over and stomps the gator. The gator strikes back, biting the horse in the leg. The two then separate. Just a little wild Florida for your viewing pleasure. Yep.
I think it's clear the horse started that, though. So if anybody should be arrested, it's the horse.
Let's bring them to Hemming Park.
Really, yeah, separate them into other in protest and counter-protest. Okay, only in Florida do visitors to the Magic Kingdom choke other visitors for blocking their view of the fireworks. Walt Disney World guest Tabitha Mature, yes, that is her real last name, was sitting to watch the fireworks when a group of high school kids in front of her stood up. She became aggravated and demanded they sit. They decided to leave, and when one girl told Mature, just take our spot, she attacked the kid. After telling park officials what happened, the teens contacted the sheriff's office, and the not-so-mature Tabitha Mature now faces charges.
Did she get to see the fireworks or not?
That's goofy.
Thanks to our panel, Tim Gibbons, Fred Matthews, Lindsay Kilbride, and John Burr. By the way, John is sticking around for more discussion, and we'll be back with more right after this.
Hendricks Avenue Baptist Church is a place to experience Christ's presence and God's Spirit in a vibrant faith community. HAB celebrates diversity, seeks to bridge differences, and journeys together in an honest and authentic search for truth. HABchurch.com. Find a different way of being Baptist.
Join WJCT at Fort Caroline Timiquan Preserve on April 29th to explore the outdoors for International Migratory Bird Day. Kids will have the opportunity to become a National Park Junior Ranger, hunt for nature treasures, win prizes, and more. Clifford the Big Red Dog will be on hand with National Park Rangers, teaching families about how to preserve existing natural habitats. This fun family event is free and runs from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Go to wjct.org/events for more information.
Easter weekend is upon us, and those church sermons need to be real.
And helping to market Hollywood films doesn't come across very authentic.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. Challenges of marketing movies with religious themes. That is next time on Marketplace.
Weekday evenings at 6 on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
The new season of the HBO series The Leftovers premieres Sunday. On The Next Fresh Air, we hear from British actor Christopher Eccleston, who plays Reverend Matt Jameson. Eccleston also played Doctor Who for one season and recently starred in the TV drama series The A-Word about a boy diagnosed with autism and how his family deals with it. Join us. Weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Welcome back. Well, it's a trend worrying millions of small business owners and larger chains around the country. Retail stores are struggling, and more they're closing their doors as online retail continues to eat away at traditional brick-and-mortar stores. What's the effect here on the First Coast as news breaks that Amazon is planning to expand here just as more stores around the region shut those doors? WJCT business analyst John Burr has been looking at this and joins us now with his thoughts. Good morning again.
Hey, good morning. Good to be back.
I know. Here you are again. Now, we've seen Payless declare bankruptcy and say they're closing stores. Radio Shack, JCPenney closing stores, including here in our area. all as Amazon keeps expanding right here in Jacksonville.
Right. Macy's, H.H. Gregg, the death spiral in retail just seems to be getting deeper and deeper as time goes on. This is not, certainly not exclusive to Jacksonville. It's happening all around the country. And there's, you know, the first reason we can talk about is Amazon. Do you remember when Amazon first came around? We were all mm-hmm. concerned that, oh my gosh, they're going to put all the neighborhood bookstores out of business.
Yeah.
Well, they're putting everybody out of business.
It goes way beyond books. Yeah.
Yeah. I think they were aiming a little higher. But, they have now 35% of the e-commerce, total e-commerce in the United States, and it's going to go to 50%, they're projecting, by 2020. That's half of e-commerce will be just going through Amazon, and e-commerce is the type of retail that's growing by far and away the fastest. So they're doing it. They're doing everything right. The traditional retailers are struggling to try to catch up, but...
And what can traditional retailers do, do you think, to stay alive in this changing landscape? Because I think there's still a place. I mean, when television came along, they said, oh, no one's ever going to go to the movies again. Well, they kept going.
Right.
I still like to go to the movies. The movie industry adapted, so... I still think that people enjoy the experience of physically walking into a store and shopping and trying on clothes or picking up items and buying them that way. I mean, I can't picture, honestly, John, a future where that just goes away. So I guess my question is, how do these brick-and-mortar establishments adapt?
It's a great point because, you know, as well as e-commerce is doing, it's still less than 10% of the total sales going on. 90% is going on at brick-and-mortar. So the great advantage that brick-and-mortar has is the face-to-face interaction with customers. And they've got to really capitalize on that. Unfortunately, as their fortunes have declined, they've fired so much of their staff. So there's a lot fewer people in the brick and mortar stores.
Fewer jobs.
And the ones that are there are they're busy stocking the shelves, or they're running the cash registers. They're not out there helping the customers, which is really brick and mortar's big advantage over online. It's amazing. In February and in March of this year, both months, 30,000 people lost their jobs, 30,000 each month.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like Christmas of 2016 was a real tipping point for retail. It wasn't that. E-commerce did great. They grew by 15%, but bricks and mortar had a kind of really actually a bad Christmas. And that's it was right after the first of the year when the money when they started adding up the money that all these chains, these huge retail giants, either said they're closing down completely or they're closing half their stores.
Yeah. So what do you think it will be the overall impact on the economy as you watch this?
It's retail is by far the biggest drag right now on employment. People are, the economy is still actually pretty healthy. You say that and people raise their eyebrows and going, yeah, well, I'm not feeling so great. But it's true. If retail was just holding its own on jobs and not having to fire people, the unemployment rate would be going down a lot faster than it is. It's interesting. It's more than just, part of this is fallout from the recession. People don't have the money the discretionary income they used to have. About half of the families in this country are spending 50% or more of their income on rent, not even on mortgages, but on rent. So if you don't have that disposable income, you don't have the money to put gas in the car, go out to the mall, your work, and spend money from 9 to 6 p.m. 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. You've got two jobs. A lot of people have two jobs. They don't have the time. They don't have the money. And if you can go on your smartphone and make a few clicks and buy stuff, why not? It's much easier.
And bringing it here to Jacksonville, Amazon adding jobs in our area. Not all of them good paying jobs, though.
Right.
Some of them will be low paid jobs, but they will be employment.
Yes. And that's a great thing. I mean, jobs, more jobs are great, but the amount of jobs that Amazon is creating, I don't have the figures, but I would venture to say that they are more than offset by our local retailers who are letting people go.
He's our business analyst, John Burr. Thanks for being with us. Well, Emmy Award-winning network journalist Soledad O'Brien is bringing her powerful foundation here to Jacksonville. Tomorrow, for the first time here at WJCT, O'Brien will lead a conference geared toward young women needing role models and advice and mentoring on how to get into college and how to get through college. I spoke with Soledad about this amazing event. Take a listen. Soledad O'Brien, a pleasure. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
We're so excited that you're bringing your powerful foundation to WJCT this week, and for the first time actually in Jacksonville. So many great women are going to be part of this, and the purpose of the foundation, I think, is so inspiring. Can you tell us a little bit about Powerful and what motivated you to create it?
Sure. My husband and I started a foundation for young women in the wake of Hurricane Katrina, actually. We saw all these girls and young women who pretty much had their hopes dashed around college or moving forward because there'd just been such devastation. And as one young woman put it, she said, I lost everything in Katrina, but of course we didn't have much before. And so we recognized that there was just very specific, tangible help, money for college. And then as we started helping young women, we recognized, and we started with, three and then five and then six and then nine, we recognized that actually as much as tuition was really, really critical, you actually needed a support group. You needed mentoring. You needed help. You needed tutoring sometimes. Like that being successful and getting to and through school, not just to college, but through, was actually a series of a lot of people helping you through. And so a couple of years after that, we started the Powerful Conferences, expanding out of our 25 scholars annually and bringing this message to about 300 girls in a number of cities. This year we're scheduled right now for 7 cities. That number will probably grow to 10 before the year ends, where we really have hundreds of girls and talk to them my focus is very specifically and tactically about here is how you get through high school to college and through college. Some of that is grades, dealing with what happens when you stumble in school. How do you find someone to help you? How do you get on campus? And literally, if you don't have support from your family necessarily, how do you figure it out? How do you figure out internships and mentoring? All these things that I think for a lot of us, I was really lucky. I had a lot of brothers and sisters, and they gave me a ton of advice. But if you didn't have that, you wouldn't necessarily know. What do you wear when you're on your first day of your internship? Well, if you don't know what an internship is and you haven't done it before, you might not know.
Right. All of those intangible things play such a role in getting to graduation day in college. It's a lot more than the tuition.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And one of the things that's been so exciting for us about Powerful, and while we're so excited to bring it to Jacksonville, is that there are so many people who are willing to help. I have to tell you, I have not asked one person for help and said, listen, I need you on a Saturday to come to really mentor and present to a bunch of young women who are really looking for advice and help. Never have I ever had anybody say, that's not for me. No, I don't care. Ever. It's amazing. Mm-hmm. And so it's a really wonderful thing to be able to take accomplished women, many of whom have, all of us have been through stuff and learned some tough lessons, who also want to sit down and pass along so much of what they learned to younger women. Really give them a good advice. How you don't give up, even when it would make perfect sense to give up.
Yeah.
Things like that, I think, are just very inspiring, but also just very, very helpful.
I'm excited to be a part of this, too, and because I remember how difficult some of those moments were going through college. And having a mentor is so important. And I also see here, this is so cool, as you said, nobody said no to helping you, Soledad. People that want to come to this conference can do so with the help of Lyft. The ride-sharing service, they're going to be providing $15 worth of ride credits for people to get to and from WJCT. How cool is that?
Yeah, they've been an amazing partner. And to be honest, I mean, again, back to our focus on tangible support for people. This is tangible support. You know, for a lot of our young women, they don't have a car. They don't have a way to get there. And Lyft was like, listen, we can help with that.
Yeah.
Which is amazing. Really. So they literally bring young women to us. It's been phenomenal. They've been a great partner, and we're really, really grateful. And what it means is that you can take somebody who would have come, who'd like to come, who'd like to give a Saturday, but just doesn't have the logistical wherewithal to get there to really come.
And people will be able not only to meet all of the women that are really great role models, they'll be able to meet you too. And of course, you're a familiar face to millions of Americans as a national news anchor. In addition to your work with the Powerful Foundation, you're still a journalist, aren't you? You're still doing media.
Yeah, I started a production company, and I host a show, anchor a show called Matter of Fact, which is on about 85% of the country. It lives on Hearst stations and non-Hearst stations around the country. It's a Sunday morning, mostly Sunday morning political talk show. It's syndicated, so it's times shift depending on locations. And then we continue to contribute, obviously, to the PBS NewsHour and do documentaries. And I'm a correspondent for HBO Real Sports. So, yeah, very, very much ensconced in great journalism. But I think, you know, at the end of the day, telling stories is also about helping people understand their story and leverage their story and change their story if they feel like their story is not quite on the right path. So it's pretty exciting for me.
It's a pleasure to speak with you. I look forward to meeting you. Thank you so much for giving us a few minutes. Really a great event coming to our WJCT studios. Thank you, Soledad O'Brien.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
And again, that's Soledad O'Brien. Her Powerful Conference takes place all day tomorrow right here at WJCT. Finally this hour, world-renowned musician Dave Eggers performs in Jacksonville this weekend for one night only at the Museum of Science and History. Joining Eggers will be the critically acclaimed vocalist Morley and the Chamber Symphony of Peace. That's a special group that includes members of the Jacksonville Symphony Orchestra led by concertmaster Philip Pan. We've got a special treat right now, singer-songwriter Morley, live in studio to perform with a preview of this special night of music at the Mosh. Morley, it's good to see you.
It's so great to be back here and to be on your show with you. I just want to thank you for keeping the conversation going for people, keeping the hope and community energy, because it can feel lonely out there in terms of justice and healing. So thank you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for that. And yeah, we always do try to bring the community together. Now, tell me a little bit about this show. You'll be performing with the Chamber Symphony of Peace and Dave Eggers. Really nice lineup.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. We're doing quite a few of my originals and a few covers of Leonard Cohen and Bob Marley. And I'm looking forward to that. And just, you know, music being part of the conversation for change and healing.
All right. And we have a preview right now, a couple of songs live in studio from Morley. What are you going to sing for us?
Well, I wanted to offer a little bit of Dr. Bernice Johnson Regan's song inspired by Ella Baker's talk. And it's called Ella's Song, based off of your program today. We who believe in freedom cannot rest. We who believe in freedom cannot rest until it comes. Until the killing of black men, black mothers' sons, is as important as the killing of white men, white mother's sons. Then we who believe in freedom cannot rest. We who believe in freedom cannot rest until it comes. Not needing the clutch for power, not needing the light just to shine on me. I need to be one in the number as we stand against tyranny. To me, young people come first. They have the courage where we fail. And if I could but shed some light as they carry us through the gale. We who believe in freedom cannot rest. We who believe in freedom cannot rest until it comes. That's just a snippet of that amazing song by Dr. Bernice Johnson-Regan, who's one of my mentors. So I wanted to share that. And this is a piece of a little bit of a song we're going to be doing with a beautiful orchestra called Desert Girl. Black balloons in the desert sky. Three blackbirds flying high. Pink and white on the horizon. I know everything is gonna be all right. That desert girl took her Indian knife. She cut it down, she cut it twice. The string of broken hearts around my neck. And we watched it slip down past my chest. Take me by the hand. Help me understand. Only one place for water. Across life's burning sands. The wind rushes in to the tent. From Jacksonville to Standing Rock to Afghanistan. Wind wild and free. As we were all made to be. The whites of your eyes shine the light of the moon. On your white horse of kindness, you really couldn't have come too soon. I wanna lay it down, lay my burden down. I was lost, but now I'm found.
Morley, Saturday night at the Mosh with Dave Egger and the Chamber Symphony of Peace. Doors open at 7, show is at 8 for one night only. You're just an amazing artist. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Again, that show's tomorrow night. I'm Melissa Ross, and this has been First Coast Connect. We'll be back at 9 a.m. Monday. Have a great weekend.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.